A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
ES Audio.
From the Evening Standard in London, I'm Rochelle Travers, and this is The Leader. Tensions are rising over nurse strikes.
If Mr. Barclay wishes to meet with me and get round the table and stop the spin and start to speak, he can avert these strikes. But my door is wide open, night and day. I will make myself available, as will my team, on behalf of our nursing staff. That option isn't open to me at this point in time. And consequently, he has chosen strikes over speaking to me.
Royal College of Nursing General Secretary Pat Cullen speaking on BBC Breakfast there, in response to comments by the Health Secretary Steve Barclay. Nurses will go on strike on 2 days next month as part of a major escalation in a dispute over pay. Dozens of trusts will see nurses walk out on the 15th and 20th of December. It's a tricky time of year for the NHS at the best of times, but the RCN say they've been left with no alternative. Daniel Keane is the Evening Standard's health reporter.
So I think the impact could be quite severe, and we're likely to see quite a lot of regional variation probably in services because the actual strikes vary by region. So what we do know is that emergency care won't be affected. So nobody's going to turn up in A&E and not have any care because of the strikes. However, what we're likely to see is an impact on routine services. So if you're trying to get your knee or hip replaced, then you could face a delay. And we're probably going to see other services like cancer treatment or urgent testing. They might be partially staffed, so you could face a delay there. But in terms of how bad it could get, I think the real difficulty for this is that the NHS is already battling a really tough winter. We have a backlog of over 7 million people that are waiting for treatment. So it's probably really going to impact the progress the NHS is making on that. And we also have quite a lot of hospital beds occupied by flu patients, very long waiting times in A&E. So it's coming on top of what I think was already going to be one of the toughest, if not the toughest, winter in NHS history. And it's adding to that. But it's also important to note this is part of 7 different health unions that are set to strike. So it's kind of part of a wider movement. It's not just nurses. And that's where I think it will cause real difficulties.
How many London trusts will be affected?
So London has less trusts striking than some other regions of the country, which will obviously influence the impact. So there's 9 trusts, and then you have 2 integrated care boards and something called NHS resolution. But the 9 trusts are the really important ones for patients to know about. So while you only have 9 trusts, you have some of London's biggest hospitals involved within that. So you've got Great Ormond Street and the Royal Marsden, which are obviously very well known for cancer care. So there's likely to be an impact there. And then you also have really massive hospitals like Guy's and St. Thomas. So I think another thing to note in terms of the impact on London particularly is that the first strike will be taking place during a week of rail strikes, which already have quite a significant impact on hospitals, whether that's sort of staff or patients travelling to the hospital. So I think in this key winter period, even though there are slightly less hospitals in London that are striking, say, compared to the southwest or the northwest, we're still going to see quite a lot of disruption.
How has it got to this point?
This is a very long-running dispute, and I think it's really important to note that this is the first time the Royal College of Nursing has ever done this, ever. So it's a really, really big deal. It's not kind of a dispute that has ever escalated to this stage. So what they want is a pay rise of 5% above RPI inflation, which is currently around 14%. So you're looking at a 19% pay rise The government hasn't offered anything close to that. So they've offered a guaranteed rise of at least £1,400 for NHS staff, which is about, I think, 4.75%. So you can just see with the two numbers there that they are really a world apart on this. It's like a sort of 15% difference. So the RCN claim that the pay award came after years of squeezes that were already there on nurses' salaries. They say the average pay for a nurse has fallen 6% between 2011 and 2021. So their argument is this lack of pay has significantly impacted morale and actually the NHS's ability to retain and attract nurses into the profession. And so obviously what happens when you have staffing shortages is morale drops, and they argue that there is a real impact on care from this. So part of the RCN's argument is that patients actually are in danger because of staff shortages and low morale, which is caused by low pay.
Strikes seem to be everywhere at the moment. How has this announcement gone down in general? Is there a lot of empathy for nurses?
I think that there is. Well, I think there's quite a lot of empathy for a lot of people who are going on strike because the cost of living crisis is impacting all of us, across the public sector particularly. I think also after the COVID pandemic, the public support and the enthusiasm for nurses and what they do is just so high. And actually, when people look at pay, when they see that the starting salary for a nurse is just over around £27,000 a year, in the current economic climate, a lot of people would think that is just too low. Now, of course, as you progress through the pay bands in the NHS, you do get more money. But it can be quite difficult to progress through those pay bands. So I think the argument that Pat Cullen and the RCN are making make a lot of sense to people. The difficulty, of course, will be if a significant amount of people who are already on a waiting list for a long time have their operations delayed further and their treatment or their diagnosis delayed, and there's a material impact of this, then I think perhaps public opinion might change. But my strong suspicion is that the public is really with the nurses on this.
Could there be more strikes announced?
Yes, I think that unfortunately for everyone, really, this is going to be quite a long-running dispute. If you look at the kind of language that Steve Barclay, the health secretary, is using, he's basically saying that the pay demands are not affordable. He won't discuss pay. That's why we've been led to this strike in the first place, as he said, I'm not going to talk about pay. And that the sort of challenging economic climate that we're in just means that the pay rise that they want cannot be paid for. Unfortunately, that economic climate isn't going to change anytime soon. We know in the autumn statement that the government kind of set targets on bringing down the deficit. So I think that ministers probably worry that if they were to give nurses a significant pay rise, then of course everybody else in the public sector, not just in the NHS, would be demanding the same sort of rise. So I suspect they may be able to meet in the middle. I mean, there could be a compromise. I don't want to be too negative, but this one could run on for quite a while. But it all depends on, of course, how impactful the strikes are, how much disruption do they cause, and does Steve Barclay just want to kind of pay them what they feel they deserve and get on with it?
Let's go to the ads. Stay there to hear Sadiq Khan on why he's expanding ULEZ to cover the whole of London.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back. The Mayor of London has announced that the ultra-low emission zone will be expanded to cover the whole of the capital. From next summer, drivers of the most polluting cars will have to pay £12.50 a day to enter the Greater London Authority boundary. As a result, an estimated 5 million Londoners will breathe cleaner air. Ross Lydall, our City Hall editor and transport editor, met up with Sadiq Khan after the Evening Standard's Plug It In Summit in London to discuss his reasons for the expansion.
I've decided to expand the ultra-low emission zone so it covers all of London for the simple reason that we've got to be tackling the triple challenges of air pollution, climate change and congestion. And just like 4 million Londoners are already breathing clean air because of the ultra-low emission zone and its expansion to the North and South Circular, I want another 5 million Londoners to also benefit from clean air.
What were the results of the consultation? Because there was some confusion or controversy around leaked results. Can you give us an overview of how many responded, how many were in favour, how many were against?
So the report I was given by Transport for London, undertaken by AECOM, analysed a number of things. The consultation undertaken this summer included the results of the YouGov poll, but also a response from stakeholders. All of the concerns raised by those who responded have been addressed in my response today in relation to the size of the scrappage scheme, in relation to the biggest ever expansion of buses in Outer London, in relation to the extension of the grace period for those who are disabled, those who are wheelchair users, in relation to the announcements today of further support for community transport and for charities, and also in relation to the other stuff we're doing to support people make a transition. In terms of numbers, the YouGov poll showed that almost twice as many people are in favour of expansion as are against it. But in terms of numbers, the consultation, more people were against the expansion than were for it. Now, I've been quite clear, this was a consultation, not a referendum, and we've taken on board all the issues raised during the consultation.
How many people will have to pay the ULEZ when it goes across Greater London in terms of how many non-compliant vehicles just now or projected by next August are registered in London?
What we do know from the last few years of the ultra-low emission zone is we've seen a massive increase in the number of compliant vehicles. We've also seen a massive decrease in the number of non-compliant vehicles. So in 2017, when I first announced the policy, there were only 39% of vehicles in London that were compliant. A month before we expanded the ULEZ to North and South Circular, that had increased 85%. A month after, it had increased to 94%. In Outer London, 85% of vehicles are compliant. On the borders of the North and South Circular out of London, it's 90%. You've got to throw into the mix, though, that half of Londoners don't own a car. In Outer London, more households have a car than in Central and Inner London. But we also know that those who don't own a car suffer the worst consequences. One of the reasons why the scrappage scheme is so huge, no support from the government, £110 million is to help as many people as possible transition from a polluting vehicle to a clean one. We've also made changes to the scrappage scheme. So now families will also have the option of receiving travel cards, which give them free travel over a period of time on public transport in London. And we're also giving charities and businesses the opportunity, and families, the opportunity to retrofit their vehicle if they prefer to do that.
Just to be clear, so that I'm sure I've understood you, did you essentially say about 10% of vehicles in the outer donut, if you like, the outer ring, will probably not be compliant and have to pay?
So 15% are non-compliant. But we also know once we announce a policy and it goes live, a number of those people become compliant. And that's why the experience from Central and Inner is so important.
Tell me about the scrappage scheme. Will it be the same as the £2,000 grant that was available under the North-South Circular scrappage scheme?
The scrappage scheme we're going to go with is very different from the old scrappage scheme. We've taken on board the response to the consultation. So the size is far bigger, £110 million, but also the eligibility is wider in relation to who is eligible, the size of the support you receive, but also the options you are given as well. And it's really important to support as many Londoners as we can. We're particularly focused on supporting low-income Londoners, on supporting disabled Londoners, on supporting charities and supporting small businesses. That's our focus.
The figures show that certainly with up to the North-South Circular, there's about 96% compliance for cars But for, if you like, vans, white van man, it's about 83%. Mm. I'd imagine it'd be similar for the wider zone. So if the scrappage scheme is to benefit disabled Londoners and low-income Londoners, it feels that the wider, the greater London ULEZ will actually primarily target white van man. Is that correct?
The size of support small businesses receive is bigger than the size of support a car receives, because obviously they're more expensive to replace a non-compliant van with a compliant van. But there's the additional option now, which there wasn't before, retrofit, which is a big change. And so broadly speaking, there are changes, but broadly speaking, £1,000 for a motorbike, £2,000 for a car, £5,000 for a van, yeah, that's shorthand.
Okay. Your previous scrappage scheme, I know you said it was different, but about 15,200 vehicles were taken off the road, but it was massively oversubscribed. That was £62 million. If you're up to £110 million, it'll be probably fewer than 30,000 vehicles that you're able to take off the road. Is that a fair calculation?
I think we're going to wait and see. I mean, the good news is we've given people lots of notice, but also we'll have an extension of the grace period for disabled drivers as well. The key thing also to say is that anyone is eligible to apply in London. So if you missed out on the scrappage scheme from central or inner London, you can still apply for this scheme, but you've got to be obviously a London resident to apply. The government gave us zero support, not just last time with the £61 million, but with this £110 million. In fact, it was a condition of the COVID funding deal that none of the TfL revenue or receipts or capital could be used for this. So this is GLA funded. I've had to this week find £25 million to try and avoid the government cuts in our buses. And I found £110 million for this. And later on in February and March, you'll see me having to make tough choices, not being able to do the stuff I want to do with this £135 million, because I think there's no choice but to save our buses, but also to give people support as we approach the Ultra Emission Zone.
And just finally on ULEZ, those who were opposed to it said, good policy, but not now, please, Mr. Mayor, because of the cost of living crisis. Mm. How much possible thought did that give you? Did you think quite hard about going ahead with next August or consider pausing it?
This was a tough decision. It's probably one of the toughest decisions I've made since being a politician, and that includes 11 years as a parliamentarian and 6 years as a mayor. I've factored a number of things, the costs of inaction versus the costs of action. Political expediency often trumps public health. In this case, it hasn't. But also I've been liked the fact that my political opponents have been against most things that have been progressive in the recent past. They haven't just been against ultra emission zone in central London, ultra emission zone expansion. The same people were against me voting to ban smoking in public places. These same people were against a sugar tax. And when you look at history, the Clean Air Act in the 1950s, there were people opposed to those brave politicians. Frankly speaking, because of the cost of living crisis, had I not been able to put forward a massive scrappage scheme of the size I have, I may have delayed this, but the scrappage scheme is so huge, but also the numbers in relation to the numbers of people who don't own a car and suffer poor health, but also the top 10 boroughs, well, I should say the worst 10 boroughs in London, with the premature deaths from Bromley, more than 200, down to in the top 10, Redbridge and those sorts of boroughs, it's not acceptable for there to be 200 bereaved families every year. And so, it's an issue of social justice, an issue of racial justice, but also an issue of a public health crisis.
And that's it from The Leader. This podcast is back on Monday at 4 p.m.